Algar Productions.
This is the Post-Atomic Horror, the most comprehensive Star Trek podcast ever produced. Your hosts are Ron Algar Watt and Maggie Robotham. Episode 435, That Hope Is You, Part 1.
Oh, wait, wrong show. Hi, friends. Wow, now I'm all thrown off. Welcome to the Post-Atomic Horror. I'm Al.
I'm Maggie.
And this is not drunken time travel. This is me drinking an energy drink because it's early and I'm tired.
Yeah, it's too early to be drunk. I was drunk just last night.
Mm-hmm. And you will
be
again.
I have no follow-up
to that,
but yeah.
So we're back on our disco bullshit.
Yep. We're back. Disco.
And I
missed you.
Well, here's the thing. I stand by my assertion that this forthcoming season is just awful, but this one was good.
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, this is a really good start to a season.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen, I think, 4 episodes of season 3.
Oh, I thought you hadn't seen any of this.
No, I've seen a little bit of it, I think.
Did you drop out in disgust or just wander away?
No, I dropped out because I saw something else and looked at it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough.
Also, you might have been like, that season sucks. And I was like, Al usually knows what he's talking about.
I mean, we're more on the same page with Star Trek than we're not.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, but more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot there are some very good highlights, some of which are here, some of which are still forthcoming. So it's not all terrible. It's not like Picard season 2, where there's just nothing redeeming about it whatsoever.
That's good to hear, because at the end of Picard season 2, you were like, now we're going to see if this or Disco season 3 is worse. So,
well, here's there's a few things. One, some of the plot points I think are stupider.
I mean, that feels like a reach considering a key part of Picard season 2 was Picard being hit by a car.
I know. And there's more episodes.
Uh-huh.
So, like, even if we got 2 or 3 good ones, there could still be 10 duds.
Mm.
So, you know. I think it's 13 or 14, something like that. So,
well, Al, I'm excited to learn with you how stupid this season could be.
And it's basically learning for me because I don't remember shit. I just remember, like, broad emotional impressions. I don't remember a lot of specifics because, you know, I don't remember things so good no more.
What'd you hate about that? I don't know. I just know that I came out of it mad and annoyed.
Well, I've been conditioned early on by our listeners to show my work because people will be like, why do you just say you hate it? What do you hate about it?
Yeah, so tell me what you hate. Okay.
I will tell you.
Here's a numbered list of things that I hate about this.
I mean, I prefer bullet points, but if you want to do numbered list, that's, you know.
1, it sucks. 2, it's stupid. 3, I hate it.
4, go to 1.
Uh-huh.
I wrote it in basic. What do you think of that?
You could just keep reading this forever and ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which is what it's like to watch season 2 of Picard.
And season 3 of Disco, but not yet. There are a couple of interesting things that happen with titles in this. First of all, they're still doing the lamb cares not for the blah, blah, blah. Like, there's some titles like that still.
I'm fine with that. Into the forest I go.
But there's also some interesting choices to number parts. This is one example of this. This is part 1. Part 2 of this episode is not technically until the season finale.
That's kind of a neat idea. I don't hate that.
And we'll talk about this when we get to it. But later this season, there's an episode called Unification Part 3, which follows on from stuff from Unification Part 2 from Next Gen.
That's very interesting.
Uh-huh. And if you don't want spoilers, I'll hold on. Like, you'll find out.
Yeah.
But you can probably figure it out. But
I mean, look, if Spock shows up, I'm going to be very surprised.
They just made some real interesting choices with parts. They're very arbitrary.
Mm-hmm. Here are my parts.
Uh-huh. Can't feel my parts. But enough bantery prologue. Why don't you tell the people what happens in That Hope Is You, Part 1?
That Hope Is You, Part 1. Our friend Michael comes screaming out of the wormhole, crashes into a ship, and then lands smack dab in the middle of an actually extremely pretty planet. You guys remember Planet Hell? Look at your girl now, Ma. Michael takes about 6 seconds to recover, sends the Red Angel suit into space to explode or melt or whatever, and hopefully we'll never have to hear the words Red Angel again. Too much red in modern Trek. Get yourself a nice soothing blue or something, you guys. Michael goes off exploring and quickly finds the ship the ship that she crashed into. She stops to exchange information with her fellow space motorist, and then gets into an altercation, by which I mean he tries to kill her. They fight for a while, but he's very sexy, so instead they walk to a local city. This is Book, a courier attempting to escape with his mysterious and alive stolen cargo, which is probably a girl in a box. I've seen science fiction Star Trek, I know how all this shit works. Book catches Michael up on the last 930 plus years, specifically that the Federation is basically gone and all the dilithium in the galaxy exploded, killing trillions of people and making it really hard to space travel. Book betrays Michael, Michael gets arrested and drugged, and she reacts to this about as well as I did that time I got really high and screamed at the painting of the Joker I have in my bedroom. Space cops take her and go off in search of Book, who is dealing with his own problems, mainly a guy trying to steal back his stolen girl in a box. There's an extended chase scene involving portable transporters and Mega Man's arm cannon before we finally get back to Book's ship, and Book opens a secret cargo to reveal a giant penis-shaped banana slug covered in Christmas lights who tries to eat Michael. Well, you can't be right every time. After all that, Book decides to take Michael to the last known Starfleet outpost in the sector, and things get really dramatic as everyone resolves to rebuild Starfleet and find Discovery. Oh, also Book has a huge cat named Grudge. She's a queen!
Sure is.
Mm-hmm.
I think the phrase, a giant penis-shaped banana slug covered in Christmas lights who tries to eat Michael, might be my new favorite thing.
Well, I'm glad I could gift that to you, Al.
It was a pretty fleeting plot point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you described it perfectly, but it took maybe 3 minutes of screen time. It was a very small part of the episode, but in your summary...
Mm-hmm. I mean, that it looms large, both in the episode and also in my brain.
I did not fixate on the fact that it was shaped like a penis. I fixated on the fact that its mouth was shaped like a vagina. So
it there's a lot going on with this giant penis-shaped banana slug covered in Christmas lights.
Yeah, and most of it is related to genitals.
Uh-huh.
I think Doc Hammer and Jackson Public must have designed it.
I love the idea that when they were doing design on this, like, okay, how many more genitals can we fit into this monster that's going to eat Michael?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and at least two more, right?
Someone in the art department cracks their knuckles and says, I can fit a lot.
Gentlemen, I was born
this baby can hold so much genitals.
They told me I was crazy when I went to art genital school.
Well, you are. Hi, I'm Aunt Genital. Welcome to my school.
Hey, I'm Aunt Genitals over here.
Uh-huh. Your checks have cleared, so we can begin.
One, penis. This is a penis.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that.
We used to teach girls have a vagina, boys have a penis, but we are more enlightened here now.
We have evolved beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
You can have any old genitals you want.
Mm-hmm. Some people got both. Not many, but some.
It's some.
Mm-hmm.
They make the most beautiful banana slugs of them all.
So it's an entire art school dedicated only to teaching you how to draw banana slugs.
Yeah, and the number one graduate did this episode, and look what a great job they did.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just going to go into my good thing, which is weirdly vaguely related to this.
All right. Sure.
The reason Michael nearly gets eaten is because she's a fucking scientist. Like, I love the choice to focus entirely on her. It's a good way to acclimate us to a pretty big change in setting. Like, this is by far the furthest future Star Trek's ever lived in. Mm-hmm. And it's almost a thousand years ahead from where she was. It's so different. And this telling the story this way with one character looking around is great. And she's such a scientist. She's she regards everything with this amazing curiosity. Like, you know, there's that, is it Arthur C. Clarke or Asimov? One of those old white guys who said, like, advanced technology is basically magic.
Oh, I think that's Arthur C. Clarke. Yeah.
I often confuse those two, and I like both their works. I just sometimes mix them up. This all is basically magic, but she's a scientist, so that's not enough. She, every single new piece of technology she sees, she immediately sticks her hand in it and is like, oh, that works this way. And then half the time, Book will be like, no, it doesn't. It works a different way.
And please don't play with that.
But sometimes she's right. And I love her curiosity. I genuinely do. It's the most Star Trek thing. She immediately just jumps in and tries to figure it out. And sometimes it gets her in over her head. Like, she's like, ooh, what a great banana slorp.
Yep. But I mean, like, you know, you wouldn't be out there in Starfleet if you didn't have that, like, interest in checking things out. Damn the consequences.
And she's got that Kirk, the phrase they used in the original Abrams movie is leap before looking thing.
Yeah.
But more in a scientific context. And it's not necessarily good. Like, it gets her in trouble. It gets her nearly eaten by a banana slug, for instance, but it gets her in a lot of trouble. Like, she started a war. It's interesting to watch.
Yeah. I mean, it makes her a good character to follow.
I agree.
Most of the time.
Yeah. And I narratively like the idea of, like I say, following just one character so we can figure out what this world's about without being bogged down with everything else. And also, Book, who is going to be a primary character going forward.
Like, yes.
I hate when a show throws us a new character in the mix of an already packed ensemble.
It's
like, after Stamets and Tilly and all these other guys, maybe the new guy will get a couple of lines, and 12 episodes in, you might start to figure him out. But spending time with just him and one character we know is a perfect way. Now I've got a good handle on Book. If he goes away for a minute, I still know who he is and what he's about. That's good. Yep. I like that.
British cat guy.
Yeah. And he's fantastic and hot as hell.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, look, I'm very gay, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah. You can't help but appreciate a work of art. That doesn't.
I mean, he takes his shirt off, and I'm just like, damn.
I mean, so was Michael. Is the thing.
Damn.
Also, let me just say, for the show to deliver a boyfriend worthy of superficially her hotness, but also her character, like,
yep.
Did you notice? You could see his chest moving, particularly when his shirt was off. He was breathing, and his mouth was closed.
Yeah.
Like. He's got a leg up on that other guy that they left 1,000 years in the past.
And God, please let him just stay there forever.
I've seen season 3 and 4 and we don't see him again.
That's really good. I didn't see him in the trailer for the Section 31 movie, but he might have been in there.
Could be. And if that's the case, that's where he belongs. I know I'm going to hate that anyway, so fine.
I mean, that trailer was insane.
I didn't see it. I don't usually watch trailers because I don't know why.
Well, Al, it's insane.
Insane in a good way?
I don't know. But it definitely, I watched and I was like, Star Trek? What?
Well, yeah, I saw you and a couple of our regulars talking about how it doesn't look like any Star Trek they'd seen.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, we'll see. But like, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, one of the problems I was having early on with this sort of Star Trek renaissance is like, all the new stuff looked exactly the same. So
sure.
I think at this point, we don't have that problem anymore. Mm-hmm. But earlier on, I think we did.
Yes.
And if it looks very different than the rest, then I suppose that's good.
Yeah. I mean, we will see. We will get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening.
Yeah.
No one can stop it from happening.
That's true. But we'll talk about it when we get to it.
Yes.
This is what we're talking about. And I like this new future, and this is your good thing.
I mean, this is such a cool setting for the new season of Disco. I was reading on Memory Alpha, they basically treat this episode like it's a pilot for a new series, and it has that feel. Like, the idea of this new universe where the Federation is basically gone, warp drive is basically impossible, is such a cool starting point. And I really love the end of the episode when they make it to the one Federation outpost, and they basically treat the Federation like it's a religion. That's such a cool thing to do 1,000 years later.
So the episode opens with this older gentleman. I'd say he's 60-ish, maybe?
Yeah, it's something like that.
In a space station by himself, just sort of going through the motions in something we don't know. And I was like, ugh, is this a season-long mystery? And it's not. It's an episode-long mystery, and those I don't have a problem with because I don't feel jerked around. And by the end, we find out it's this guy. And basically, this is like a fantasy story. This myth has been passed down from parent to child for generations, and he's at one of the last outposts, keeping the flame going in case someone ever shows up. And it really does feel like a religion or a fantasy story or something. Mm. And then she shows up. The guy they got playing him was so good. The emotions, the tears welling up and the joy and the, like I said, I point out he's an older gentleman because he has spent his entire life, presumably first under the care of his parents, but then by himself.
He mentions he's been doing this for 40 years, which is a long time to get up and sit in a chair and wait.
I mean, he had morning chores to do. He had the digital equivalent of going and feeding the chickens or whatever.
Exactly. Well, he has to feed his clock.
He's got a clock that's a bird.
That clock that's a bird is incredible. I love that. I wish I had a bird clock.
All they did, I assume, I mean, it was probably CG, but they might have just gotten a bird and projected a clock on it. It's not like a weird thing you can't wrap your head around. It's just a bird with the time on his chest.
Yeah. Well, when you say it like that, it sounds stupid.
Oh, it is stupid, but it's exactly my kind of stupid.
Uh-huh.
But no, you get the idea that this guy's been doing this in his entire adult life, and he's by himself, and there's no long-range communication, so he's probably got no one even to talk to, and he's just waiting, and his father waited, and his grandfather waited, and they never saw anyone, and maybe there's no one, and then Michael Burnham shows up, and is like, no, I'm here, and look, here's my working tricorder, here's my working phaser, I got one of them badges, like, I'm one of the guys, and he's crying, and the guy was great. It could have been such a thankless role. He's in it for 5-10 minutes, but I was right there with him. It was so good.
Well, the bit where he's like, we have the flag and only a commissioned officer can.
Yeah. The protocols say I'm not allowed to touch this. Can we please hang it now?
So let's put the flag up. And then, Michael basically is like, no, you're in Starfleet now. You put the tie. You're in. Like, we're doing this.
As the ranking officer here, I can commission you. So you have a field commission. You're in Starfleet.
And he's just like, oh my god.
Yep. So good. Mm-hmm. And it's such a quiet. Like, this show really gets lost in its overplotting mysteries and all that bullshit. Mm-hmm. But this was such a small character-driven episode. We followed Michael, we followed Book, and then this guy, and that's it. And the rest are all antagonists and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like it's so much nicer this way. I'm not saying we don't need the Discovery crew. I'm saying don't get lost in all your dumb plot.
No, this is this is a great starting point. Like, this feels like it's going to be a big, cool thing. You know?
And the larger plot / theme of Michael rebuilding the Federation / Starfleet it is great. I love that.
And I mean,
where they take it is dumb, but
The other thing, that's a great concept to hang a series on. Cause I know Disco has sort of not really known what it is, you know?
No, it was 5 minutes before the original series, this happened.
Here's Spock's sister you never heard about. And it really sort of gets lost, and then season two is the big long mystery that's awful.
The takeaway from season two is here's Captain Pike, let's give him his own show.
Yeah, and I was like, good, let's do that, because none of the rest of this was very good.
No, and that was much more natural anyway, because we know who that guy is, and we're just going to see what he got up to.
Yeah, let's see some space adventures. And those space adventures have been very good for the most part.
Yeah, on the whole, yes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and now I said this before I knew they were doing it. I've speculated way more wrong than I've ever speculated right. I just happened to be a broken clock in this case. But what I said was they should send them far in the future and with a blank slate and start everything over. I said that sometime in season two, I want to say.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they did it. And I was like, oh, my God. They actually, I think it was in a supplemental where someone wrote it and said, what would you do? And I'd say, I'd put them somewhere new we haven't seen before.
Yeah, in the future, way, way, way beyond anything we've seen before.
I think I only wanted, the next generation, maybe. I didn't need this.
That could be.
And I've also said this on the show. When you get far enough in the future, I have trouble wrapping my head around it.
Fair.
I have a pretty good notion of what 200 or 300 years in the future is, but this is 1,000 years into Michael's future, which means it's about 1,300 years into our future. I have no fucking idea what that means.
Very far into the future.
Yeah, that's like the year 800 to us.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if people from the year 800 showed up now, the world is nothing like that.
Hey, we're from the year 800. Ah!
Covered in dirt and you know, the couple of things we knew went away for a while. Like,
hey, here, this is an electric light. Play with this for 3 weeks.
Yep, exactly. Ooh. And which brings me back to my good thing. Just like, Michael should be like that, but instead she's just like, how's this work? What does this do? They've got all this cool tech that's like those, and we both pointed this out, those things that executives have on their desk that you get at Spencer's Gift.
You put your hand in it or whatever, and it's like, oh, it's a hand.
Yeah, and it's got a bunch of, not exactly needles, but like tiny metal things that take the contours. It's like a topographical map, but made out of metal. Mm-hmm. And all the tech around them works like that, and it's very interesting looking.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, as we'll see as this world gets fleshed out, everything now is printed because the writers found out what 3D printing is. And, like, we already had that with replicators, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now you can see it come out of the floor.
Yeah, I guess so. It's still cool. And there's a lot of interesting things you can do. And I think they're doing a good job of showing us, you know, like building on what we know. But also it's kind of weird, too. So
I mean, you know, the opening with the guy, like, and his bed, like, rises out of the ground and, like, goes back into the ground when he's not using it. It's like, that's cool. Yeah. That's a cool concept. I could use that around here where I have no space for anything.
Mm-hmm. But your bad thing is kind of related to some of the other aesthetic things, no?
I mean, that's the thing. The city on this planet just looks like a combination of the Blade Runner city, which we just saw in Picard, and a old hospital. Like, if this is the future, and it's the far future in a far off distant planet, like, it should look really different, you know? They do a pretty good job for the rest of the episode of making this, like, the when they're out in the wilderness of the planet, which I looked and I guess was filmed in Iceland.
I just guessed Vancouver because it's always Vancouver, but
like, it looks really cool.
Well, we sang this show's praises because this is the first modern Trek show, and now they don't have to go to, as you said, Planet Hell, like that horrible back lot that they repurposed over and over and over again.
Dentist office full of plants.
Or occasionally they'd go on location somewhere within a very short radius of the studio, like to a community college campus or something. Well, but now they can go places and shoot things, and then they sweeten them just a little with CG. They don't make a whole CG planet, but if you shoot among a bunch of trees and then you make the trees look weird in post, that's perfect.
I mean, there's a long range shot of like them walking, and like it's just like there's like a waterfall or like a beach or whatever.
Yeah.
But like there's a planet in the like in the sky in the background. Like it looks fucking great, you know?
Yeah, you got the Star Wars thing where it's like, oh, there's a couple of moons and there's a giant something over there. And like, yeah, it's good. And it's again, it's that great mix of practical still go on location because real places look more like real places than
fake
places. Exactly. But then, make them alien.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of the best of all worlds, I think.
No, I have seen a lot of TV shows that filmed in Vancouver. I'm like, I know that specific type of woods. I've seen Mulder and Scully and The Flash out in those woods about a billion times each.
Yeah, but they could, you know, with modern technology, make it look not so much like Vancouver is what.
But
I
looked it up, and I'm just like, well, I know Vancouver pretty well. I don't think I don't know what any of this is. You know, I feel like I would know about this place if it was within driving distance of my childhood home. So I looked it up on Memory Alpha, and it's like Iceland. I'm like, of course.
I don't remember the.
I don't
last
know what
time.
Iceland looks like.
I mean, for a while, I don't know if this is still happening, but Iceland Air was running crazy, crazy specials to Reykjavik.
Reykjavik, yeah.
Yeah, to Iceland.
Reykjavik.
The point is, a lot of my American and Canadian friends visited Iceland, so I have seen a lot of vacation photos. I have a little bit of an idea of what it looks like. Like our friend Irene went there, for instance.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And a few of my friends from back in Maryland went there. Like, it was real cheap to go there for a while.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I didn't get, like, amazing helicopter shots like these, but...
No. Well, I assume you didn't have a helicopter, or they didn't have a helicopter.
I did, but I didn't go to Iceland, so, you know. It's like...
it's, you can have one or the other, but not both. You can have a helicopter, you can go to Iceland, but you can't take a helicopter to Iceland. That's illegal.
Yeah, that's where the old expression comes from, obviously. But
shit
also
in one hand, helicopter to Iceland, and the other, see what piles up first.
Why are you shitting in your hand? Stop it. We have toilets. Use a chamber pot if you're from the 800s, but
not on the helicopter.
No, not in the helicopter.
Oh, man, I want to show someone from the 800s a helicopter.
Oh, God. I mean, we don't know how they work now.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's impossible to know.
I'm not kidding. Like, I worked around helicopters. I've talked about this.
No, I know.
I worked around some very, very smart engineers. Mm-hmm. Like, one guy had a doctorate and had patents on these, an alloy that didn't exist before. Like, they were really smart people, and they straight up said, we don't know how they fly.
Wow.
We know that they do. We know that if we do this, this will happen. But we don't still really understand entirely how.
Is this like how no one knows how bees work?
It's a lot like that, yeah.
Wow.
And it may not actually be true. They might have been fucking with me, but that's what they told me 20 years ago. So anyway, I'm trying to think, going back to the Iceland thing.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of the last time Star Trek went on location to that extent. Like, they shoot near L.A. or they shoot in Vancouver. Did they ever leave the continent to do something?
They
like for a TV show, not a movie?
Yes, they mentioned this in the article on Memory Alpha. I was reading.
Oh, I forgot to look that up.
Yeah, yeah. So in the pilot, the planet Michael and Georgiou are walking around.
Oh, where they make the big insignia, right?
Yes, I forget. I know it's in Africa. I could not tell you where off the top of my head, but
that's okay. But they went to a different continent.
Yes,
the point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like typically, these movies occasionally do that, but even then, like the original series movies had almost no money and pretty much shot around California, as I recall.
How much more California could we get?
Well, the captain's going on vacation and he's going climbing in the mountains on Earth, so that's easy.
He's gonna go climb a rock.
Mm-hmm. Why is he climbing a rock?
He makes love to the mountain, Al.
Oh, I don't need to see that. Thanks, Bill. But no, it's like it is way above and beyond for the show to go all the way to Iceland to shoot, but it's worth it. It's not like they shot the same bullshit they always shoot. It was like it obviously like looked great to us.
Oh, it looks amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big old waterfall.
Yeah. And they looked behind it like so much King's Quest.
Yeah. And they found a treasure. Mm-hmm. The treasure was friendship.
Let's look for treasure.
Food. Do 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 do.
They need a lot of cat food. This is a very large cat.
That is a very large cat. She has a thyroid condition.
Listen, I need to make something very clear to you that you already understand. I just need to remind you. When I say something like that, you have to immediately defensively say she's a queen.
She's a queen.
I don't usually tell you how to make your references or jokes, but in this case,
I put it in the summary.
I know.
It's just there.
I know, but if anyone ever dares say anything about that cat, that's what you gotta say. Both of us, that's what you gotta say. Book will show us the way, you'll see. My bad thing. From what I recall, this is actually, like, I had a little bit of a hard time with this, because this was a great episode.
It really was.
And there's actually, this is praising with faint damnation?
Uh-huh.
Like, there's a good thing in my bad thing. From what I recall, they do a great job from this point forward populating the future with recognizable Star Trek guys. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a Morn here.
There was a Morn. That was very cool.
There's all the aliens chasing them, and one of them was just from Morn. I don't think we ever saw any of those guys other than Morn himself.
No, just Morn.
Yeah. Like, so it's like, ooh, there's a Morn. Nice. Uh-huh. And at one point, there's a changeling, like a proper founder changeling. Not
That's cool.
Oh, no, not in this episode. I'm saying,
okay.
Might not even be this season, but sometime when Disco is in this future, you see one of those guys and they're just part of the background. Like,
yep.
I don't know. It's been 1,000 years. Maybe some of them just live around here. Who knows?
We had to come here because we want to live with salads.
Mm-hmm. We're looking for poor. Oh, no.
You're going to have to, you're probably going to keep looking then.
Mm-hmm. And look, this episode had Orions and Andorians, and Michael's first thing is like, Andorians and Orions are working together? Like, it's been 1,000 years, Mike. Yes.
I mean, that sort of thing keeps coming up.
I know, and that's fine, because that reminds us, the audience, like, oh yeah, this isn't what we're used to. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Also, like, 1,000 years is, like, that's a hard one to wrap your head around, honestly.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. They might as well be in the year 1,000,000.
Yeah, it's like... It's been 1,000 years. It's a legion of superheroes here.
Exactly. But there's an Orion and an Andorian who chase Michael and Book around, who look fake?
Yep, they sure
do. Like, they should just look like guys wearing makeup. The Morn guy is an entire prosthesis, but particularly the Orion is just should just be a guy in green paint. And yeah, like everything, they can sweeten it in post, but fundamentally, it's just a guy, like a regular guy, but green. But he looked like, I got real Uncanny Valley vibes from him and the Andorian, and I'm not sure why he just did like too symmetrical or something.
There was something about it where, like, I didn't realize this until I saw your note. Like, there was something off about him.
Yeah.
But, like, after I read your note, I'm like, that's just a regular dude pretending to be an Orion, and no one is saying anything about it.
Well, then in that case, he's an actor, you see. That's how TV shows work.
No, but I mean, in-universe, this is a normal dude.
Could be.
Uh-huh. I don't want anyone to know I'm not an Orion. Where's my green paint?
Mm-hmm. It didn't look like a guy in green paint. That's the problem. No. A guy in green paint would have looked correct. Like, what's her name? Gayla? In the first Gayla movie? Uhura's roommate at the Academy.
Yeah.
That Kirk fooled around with.
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah, but she was literally just a woman in green paint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what Orions look like. And look, you can fiddle with it a bit. Like, I think they took the Klingons a little too far. But if they want to tweak some designs, that's fine. But they didn't do that. He just looked like a weird... He looked like... You remember the Duracell commercials with the fucking weird toy guys?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Or the
video for Primus's Winona's Big Brown Beaver also had that.
Oh, God. I haven't thought about those Duracell people in a while.
Yep, he looked like one of them.
We gotta do something to fight off the Energizer Bunny. Well, it ain't this, Duracell.
Mm-hmm.
Oof, a doof.
I mean, maybe this what comes of Agnes's example of eating batteries after a thousand years? Yep.
The Agnes Eats Batteries cult that arose?
Yep, exactly. Let's see, what else?
We eat batteries and wear red dresses?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I agree with about half of that plan.
Yeah, sure. But other than the Andorian and the Orion, like all the other aliens are pretty cool, I thought.
Oh yeah. They really put some work into the background guys that were trying to kill them, you know?
Yeah. And I wanted to say to your point about the Blade Runner city, you're not wrong. It is just like, here's a gleaming city with a bunch of like shiny surfaces and screens and stuff. But at least it wasn't a grimy Mos Eisley.
That's true. They do love a grimy Mos Eisley. Like,
well, there's going to be one this season that they go to a lot, and I hate it.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, all the dilithium is gone, and we'll find out. I've already alluded to this, but
we'll
won't
find out
again.
The stupid reason.
Yeah, but is dilithium really the only... Like, because I don't know. I don't know the fake science at all. I thought I had a basic handle. I thought dilithium was just fuel. It was just like... a way to cause an antimatter reaction that made the warp drive work.
It's, as far as I know, it's like the main way. Like, there are other ways to...
Well, right, that's what I'm saying. Like, the fact that they lost it shouldn't be, like, because I know Romulans have, like, a singularity.
Yeah. And, like, someone mentions the solar sails from DS9.
Right.
Like, which I assume also would work, but would be very slow.
I don't think they work at warp speed. I think they could... maybe get you out of a solar system, but not across the galaxy. But even still, it just feels weird that if you lose this one substance, you have no other alternatives and no one worked on something. Like, I don't know, at that point you reach out to the Romulans and you say, look, you know what? We will cede all of the territory in the neutral zone to you. We will give you so many concessions if you just tell us how that fucking black hole drive works.
Right, and then the Romulans were like, no.
Yeah, exactly. Because and then we'll just
they're
steal
the Romulans.
It from them. But then their planet blows up, and what the fuck are you going to do?
Yeah. No, well, I like, one of the things I like about this is, like, dilithium might, like, it might not be the only way, but it's the most common way.
That's fine.
And so, like, you lose anyone who was on a ship. You lose, like, so many people who knew what they were doing. You lose connection, like, ways to talk to each other.
No,
so,
oh, go ahead.
It's not impossible, but, like, it's gotten so much more difficult.
It just feels like there would be a way to rebuild after that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I also narratively do genuinely like, and Amanda pointed this out, that historically, when you have any kind of empire, even a benign one, like when they're stretched too thin, that's when it collapses. And that's kind of what happened here. They can't get to the outer reaches of the Federation anymore. So it fell apart. And
I think it's Book who's like, they just sort of disappeared, you know? Like, it wasn't an overnight thing. They just sort of like, you know, there's not as many of them anymore.
Right. And showing up at this outpost, and he's like, yeah, there are others, but like, I can only scan within, I think, like, I wrote this down, like, are they playing the how many times can you say the word sector game?
Uh-huh,
because it's like sectors, 30 sectors. Well, can you scan more sectors? No, I can't.
I
want to
know more
sectors.
About the sectors. Tell me more.
Other
sectors.
People in different sectors can scan the other sectors, but I can't talk to them in those sectors because I'm in this sector.
Okay. Uh-huh. I have to contact them from this sector, and I can't.
Sponsored by sectors.
It's a fun word to say.
It is, but they said it a lot and it lost all meaning. But regardless, he can only see in like a, I don't know, 6 light years. I don't remember what the distance was, but it was very small in galactic terms. So Michael, like, and there's, he's not the only one of these. Yeah. Like, there's others. So, sorry.
Michael's like, I'm trying to find the USS Discovery. And he's like, well, there are 2 ships in this sector. Let's see. No, neither of those 2 ships is the Discovery.
Actually, hang on. There's one parked out there. Excuse me, Captain Book, was it? Is your ship called Discovery? No, okay, that's one of them.
No, okay, all right.
The other one. Oh, the other one is mine in case I need to leave here. Nope.
Yeah, that's that's embarrassing.
Uh-huh.
I could
call
again?
It Discovery. Would that help you?
Okay, Book, me, nope, that's it.
Mm-hmm. I do like in... You pointed this out in your notes. Michael gets a great nickname when Book sees her antiquated outfit and technology.
Oh, yeah. So she's wearing like her under Red Angel like jumpsuit thing, which is a great look, by the way. Yeah. And he calls her Rocket Girl. And she's like, please don't call me Rocket Girl. Michael, I would murder somebody to be called Rocket Girl. That's the best nickname I've ever heard.
Don't murder anyone. I'll just call you that.
Yeah, perfect.
And if I call you that enough, then other people will hear, oh, I guess that's what we call Maggie now.
Yeah. Change my name to Maggie Rockets.
That's fine.
Which is pretty fucking cool, actually.
Mm-hmm. Better than robots.
It is better than robots. Shit.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing I haven't put in that legal name change yet.
Well, don't just leap right into it. Give it a second.
I gotta take some time, but...
Mm-hmm. The note that I put down when she found out about what happened was the Federation. That died 30 years ago this very night.
Uh-huh. You can still look. Mm-hmm. There's the haunted uniform he left in the back of my car.
The haunted pips.
Mm-hmm. One of those.
Oh, no, it's street corn. One of the only good jokes from Lower Decks.
Uh-huh.
I did love every time Book was... despite himself, fascinated by Michael.
Oh, yeah.
And he would start asking her a question and immediately head himself off and say, no, don't tell me.
No.
Nope, never mind.
I love that. Just like, he clicks that she's from the past real fat. Like, it doesn't come up till the end of the episode, but he clearly realizes something's up. And he's just like, this is so cool. I can't get into this.
Not interested.
I am not doing any space adventures. I am doing space work.
And I love the reluctant hero in like in a world that we're pretty familiar with. I like someone saying, nope, not getting pulled into all this Star Trek shit.
Nope, I'm not doing it.
Nope. Spatial anomalies and time travel. Nope, not interested.
I don't care. I'm going to get my little bit of dilithium. I'm going to take my giant penis-shaped banana slug back to where it belongs. Mm-hmm. Good day.
Also, I love on his ship, he has all that cool tech we talked about, but also Pelican cases are still the perfect form of like, you know, those hard plastic cases that snap shut.
Yep.
Are still the perfect technology. Those haven't changed in like 1300 years. I usually that bugs me like, ugh, it's the future. We wouldn't have that anymore. But no, have you ever handled a proper Pelican case?
I didn't even know they were called Pelican cases, and I will never forget that. That is incredible.
That's the brand. I'm sure there's other brands, but that's the, like, really nice one.
Sure.
And the proper ones are super expensive. Like, I have one to hold my microphones when we do remote stuff.
Yeah, and another to hold your Pelican.
Of course. No, I think the point is it's the pelican holding it in its mouth.
Right, right. Because it's living.
I'm not sure. I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it's been around since Flintstone times. You're right.
Yeah.
It is very old technology.
It's the oldest technology.
Yeah. But that shit can survive like a nuclear blast, man. It's mm-hmm. it's like hardcore. Yeah,
again, just like a real pelican.
Yep.
After the apocalypse, the only thing left will be cockroaches and pelicans, and the pelicans mm-hmm. will eat all the cockroaches, and then they'll mm-hmm. starve to death, and the world will be over.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Mm-hmm.
I also like that Book pronounces it tricorder.
Yep.
The way in the Hertzfeld cartoons, they say time travel.
Time travel.
Oh, you have a tricorder.
This is the result of time travel.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta watch that again.
Yeah.
I haven't felt really sad in a while.
I was gonna say ready for an existential weep.
Uh-huh. I was what do you call it? It's Such a Beautiful Day was playing at at our local theater.
Oh god.
And I really wanted to go see it and I just missed it. But
I think I'd rather watch that at home. I don't want to cry in front of a bunch of strangers.
Man, no. The idea of that being just on the big screen just overwhelming me with emotion.
Mhm. Mhm. It's good to feel stuff, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard, you know?
Yeah.
Plus, I didn't for a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A really long time.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Michael tripping balls.
Oh, God. It was really fucking funny.
Well, Sonequa Martin-Green, like, I hate some of the criticisms leveled at her. Like,
oh, yeah.
And a lot of them are clearly because she's a woman of color, and I don't, like, shut up. And every time I have something disparaging to say about her, I worry that I'm going to say, but sometimes I'm going to have criticism. But mm-hmm. my point is, sometimes they play her too serious, and that's more in the writing. She doesn't seem to have a sense of humor. She's deadpan. Mm-hmm. She's agonizing about her stupid boyfriend or her mother mm-hmm. or whatever. But here, one, she gets her sense of wonder, like her scientific sense of wonder, which is overwhelming. And then she gets this drug trip scene where she just gets to chew the scenery. And she's having so much fun between those two things.
It's really funny. And also, like, they do some camera stuff that, like, it feels like she's tripping. Like, it's what she is feeling while she's tripping.
Yeah, it's sort of truth serum, but it also makes her goofy, like weed or whatever. And at one point, she's like, this makes me really talk a lot. I have a friend with red hair. You cannot give her any of this. Very good.
When it hits her, there's a really cool effect that looks like she's splashing into reality or something. I love that. And then she's like, this shit's got a kick to it, huh?
And it's subtle. Like, mm-hmm. that's all the effects pretty much in this episode are like, they don't hit you over the head with the fact that, look, we're making a science fiction show.
Yep.
Which I like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's
good stuff.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I like that those two guys that look weird are like quietly bemused by the whole thing. Just wow.
Wow. She really can't handle her truth serum, huh?
That hit real hard, huh?
Uh-huh.
What else?
Oh, so we haven't really talked about Book. Like, he is a courier and maybe a smuggler. I don't know. You know, it's hard not to project assumptions based on every other science fiction thing we've ever seen. But I don't think he's a smuggler. I think he's really just a courier.
I mean, he smuggles, like, animals back to his...
Well, that's the thing is, like, so he comes from a planet of, like, hunter types. And we're going to get into this more when we get his backstory episode. Mm-hmm. But he talks about it a little bit. And he broke away from his family because he's a Star Trek character and he's got family issues.
Yeah.
He's basically a conservationalist now.
Yes.
Where he'll take extinct or near extinct member of a species and put it on a sanctuary planet. Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's great.
No one, like, with the Federation gone, no one's enforcing, like...
She says something about this, like, Endangered Species Act.
Endangered Species Act, which is a cool concept for, like, a character to just be like, no, I go out there and I find these things that are, like, there's only a few of them left. And, like, I try and, like, you know, keep them around. That's that's a really cool concept for a character, you know?
It's also a real easy narrative trick to get us on his side. Like, he's the guy who saves all the little animals.
Yeah. Yes, all the little animals.
No, she's a queen.
I meant space slug.
I know, but that's how that goes. but it's also, I like that they're exploring, like, okay, the Federation collapsed, there's no warp travel, that's fine, uh-huh. there's no Starfleet, but what else does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just how it affects Starfleet, it's how it will affect everything. Well,
yeah.
without, you know, like, an authority looking over and making you do the right thing, people tend to not do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so hunting animals to extinction and shit is terrible. Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah, well.
Fucking knock it off. I want to go look at rhinoceroses.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite things to look at, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, you ever seen a rhinoceros in real life? It's like looking at a dinosaur.
Okay. I found it more looking like a rhinoceros, but all right.
No, it's just like, so, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but so the Oregon Zoo is very close to us, so we go there pretty regularly. Okay. And you can get real, real close to a rhinoceros just walking around doing shit, nuts.
I grew up near D.C., which has the National Zoo, which is one of the best zoos we have. Like, not, yeah, I think it's them in San Diego. So
well,
I've seen,
listen, I'm not
I've
here to zoo shame you.
No. I'm saying I went there a lot as a kid. I've seen I've seen the rhinos.
All right. Well, find yourself a day and go look at a rhinoceros if you can.
I'm good.
I highly recommend it.
That's what I've said. I already have. And all right. They're all right. And hippos are all right and all that. But the ones I really.
Elephants.
Yeah. Elephants are good. Huh? The ones I hate are pandas, though. Fuck them.
You do hate pandas.
They know what they did.
I have known that about you for so long, I forgot about it. And then,
well, it doesn't come up much anymore. But
it doesn't, but like that's some deep owl lore.
Mm-hmm. what else?
Let's see. My clone drugs. That might be it.
Okay. That's about all I have, too. Yeah. Well, it looks like you have a quote. What do you got?
Oh, I do have a quote. This is the introduction of Grudge the cat.
You have a very large cat.
Yes. She has a thyroid condition.
Does she have a name?
Grudge.
Because?
She's heavy. And all mine.
Yes. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
There was a comic, I don't think they're doing it anymore, but that IDW was doing for a while. It was like Tales from the 31st Century that were just sort of like, it was like an anthology set in this future. And there was a whole story about Grudge that was very good.
Oh, that's awesome. I might check that out. The IDW Trek comics have been really impressing me lately.
When they're not about the Mirror Universe, they're usually pretty good.
I just finished the Day of Blood crossover, which I thought was going to be stupid because that's a stupid name. It was great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sisko with one crew and Worf with another crew. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, that's the Star Trek title and then the Defiant title.
Yeah, they're great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, like I say, when they're not about the Mirror Universe, they're good. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they're about the Mirror Universe about a third of the time.
Oh, God, they love making them about the Mirror Universe. And J.K. Woodard draws most of them and they all look terrible.
Mm. Blech. Well, you know who else loves the Mirror Universe? This show.
Uh-huh.
And from what I understand, well, I know for a fact we're going to spend at least two more episodes there, but I think...
Oh, come on! We're in the future!
Hang on. And then there's a third one, I think, in the final season, too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, lots more of that to look forward to.
What the fuck did you... Oh, but what if it was the Mirror Universe of the future? You made a future! Fucking look around in that!
I'm not positive it is the Mirror Universe of the future, because the ones that I saw were from before.
Oh, my God, that's...
Basically, they have to contrive a reason to get Georgiou back there so they can make that stupid movie, so...
Oh, my God. All right, fine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. I guess she's still on Disco, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I remember, I might be wrong, but if I remember correctly, next episode is going to be this story from the other side. Like, we're going to follow the Disco guys and wondering where Michael is, and then we'll catch up with her. But I might be wrong about that.
I'm down. I'm looking forward to seeing those guys again.
Yeah, same.
I like those guys.
Yeah. I like most of them.
Yeah. That's the thing.
More of them.
Good crew. Do cool things. That's your problem.
Yeah.
Now that What's-His-Face Bag Salad is gone, I'm having a much better time.
I'm still not a huge Dr. Boyfriend fan, but we'll see. Maybe he improves.
Not fair.
Like, I don't dislike him, but I found him a little disappointing.
Yeah, fair. Well, he was supposed to die.
Well,
and then they were
not,
whoops.
I'm not disappointed that they undid that, but I am... I don't know. I've talked about this before. I don't love the fussy little gay guy being a thing, but that but it is a thing.
I mean, they do exist. Like,
and most gay dudes love seeing it, so I don't like I'm only bi. I only have half a vote here, but I don't like it myself. But that's look, if that speaks to people, if they feel represented, then I'm not going to say don't do it. I just, it's not something I love. I think our friend Quinn's going to be joining us next week.
Awesome.
I got to double check with them, but it looks like they've put themselves down for that. So that'll be good.
Cool.
And I think that's about all. Let's see the usual stuff. If you want to write to us, it's going to be some time till the next mail show is not.
We
got to
do
Discovery.
Three seasons of Disco. So, you know,
and
strap
they're
in.
They're not uniform 10 episode seasons like we've been getting used to. There's, like I said, I think this one's 15 or something. These are weird numbers, but we're going to be doing this till next March. But if you got something you want to tell us, send it, write it down, and then we'll get to it when we get to it.
Yeah.
If you want to contribute to our Patreon, we would love that. And you would be able to hear us reviewing Lower Decks. We've cracked into season 2 now.
Yep.
Patreon.com/Algar. And there is no tier system. You donate whatever you like and you get access to all of it.
So. Everything. And there is a lot of content on there. Like,
well, there's all the PAW stuff. Mm-hmm. There's all the Kids Love Batman stuff we did before that. There's Endeavor stuff. There's stuff for my other things like Contentment Corner and Radio Adventures. There's all kinds of things.
Yep.
And it's all there for
Death of Podcast episodes.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. So, yeah, it's all there and it's all like a buck or more. Like whatever you think is fair. Whatever you can spare is great. And I think that's all for this time.
Yeah. See ya, folks.
She's a queen.
The Post-Atomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Maggie Robotham and Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2024. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.